You play cartels very nicely. Once you start, don't stop. Keep going. Okay? When you go to Rath Yatras, you should bring your cartels with you. It's just wandering around. It's not the same. Play very nicely. Continuing, nearing the conclusion of Chapter 6 of Canto 1, Conversations between Narada and Vyas. So we heard about Brahma and Narada and all the creative elements of one portion of the universe being withdrawn within the body of Garbhadaksha Vishnu during the night of Brahma, and then the next morning, the next day of Brahma, Narada being manifested, and Narada says, other great sages also, such as Marichi, Angira, and Atri, were also created from the transcendental body of the Lord. There's some commentary by Jiva Goswami on this verse, where he's explaining that Narada is a very, very special soul. There's souls, there's special souls, and there's very special souls. Narada is one of them. Very special. Jiva Vishesham Avalambya. So it's quite extraordinary that he has this memory. In fact, Vyas comments, how can you remember something that happened 4,320,000,000 years ago, like it was earlier today? How can you recall? And because he has this, he's specially endowed. He doesn't have a material body. He has a spiritual body. And Jiva Goswami comments that he awakened by himself, meaning he didn't hear an alarm clock, or the Lord didn't shake him by the shoulder and say, come on, Narada, it's time to, because it's a transcendental state. So 4,000 yuga cycles. Doesn't make it clear how that's possible, because the night of Brahma is the same as the duration of Brahma's day. And Brahma's day is 1,000 yuga cycles. In any case, that's what Jiva Goswami says. So perhaps that's something like, not even just the next morning of Brahma or the next day of Brahma, but maybe a couple days later. 4,000 yuga cycles. How Jiva Goswami understands this, Jiva Goswami knows. Must be some scriptural reference. But so he's specifically, Jiva Goswami describes, he's self-awakening, meaning that he doesn't take birth in a physical way like most beings do. Krishna doesn't take birth in a physical way. A big part of Christian teaching is to glorify that Christ also was born not in a physical way. And Jiva Goswami is disclosing not only Krishna and Narada But there's a whole group of rishis. In fact, the brothers, the rishi brothers, we mentioned some yesterday. In the verse that's mentioned, Atri and Agastya and Pulaha and Bhrigu and Marichi and Daksha and Vishishta and Palaha. These are all in the same category. They're not born by physical arrangements, but rather they're self-awakening. And then they manifest, like Marichi manifested from the mind of Brahma. Pretty interesting way to appear. He appeared from the mind of Brahma. And Narada appeared from the heart of Brahma. So they manifest in a transcendental way. So just emphasis on understanding. Narada is not ordinary. It should be thought of, it's an offense. This is an offense to think of Krishna as ordinary. Narada is not. And therefore, anything in relation to Narada, his singing, his moving about, his playing upon his vina, they're transcendental activities, they're not ordinary. So, we ended with text 32, where Narada is concluding that after this appearance as the son of Brahma, I now travel constantly singing the transcendental message of the glories of the Lord, vibrating the instrument called Veena, which is charged with transcendental sound and which was given to me by Lord Krishna. So now, what does Krishna do? It's all about Narada speaking about himself. Now from Krishna's side, he's going to speak about Krishna. What does Krishna do? Krishna becomes attracted by the pure devotional glorification of Narada. And so, in that position of being attracted, he appears within the heart of Narada such that Narada can see him as soon as he begins singing. The verse reads, "The Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, whose glories and activities are pleasing to hear, at once appears on the seat of my heart as if called for. As soon as I begin to chant his holy activities," and that's like always, he's always chanting. So the Lord is always there, visible before Narada. Although when Narada appears, others may not see the Lord. Narada sees the Lord. And so all of his expressions and conduct and so forth are in that state. And in the purport, the beginning point that Prabhupada makes, the first point is the absolute nature of God, or the absolute nature of Krishna. Because Krishna is absolute, he is not different than his name or his glories, or he's not different than what Narada is vibrating. And so because he's not different, as soon as the pure devotee engages himself in the pure devotional service of hearing, chanting, and remembering the name, fame, and activities of the Lord, at once he becomes visible. So, visible, starting with through the ear, through hearing. Prabhupada has explained this. When we say seeing, we conventionally think of through the eyes. But we can also, let's say there was somebody ringing the bell and you hear the door open and you can hear them. So in that sense, you can see by hearing. You hear their voice, so you know who it is. But that's something material. Now something spiritual is the sound of Krishna, and Krishna are not different. So it's at once the realization on the platform of pure devotional service, it's seeing. Because the sound of Krishna and Krishna are not different. Seeing through the ears. It sounds like something like a metaphor, but it's not. There's on the platform of pure devotion, there's such attraction for Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that as soon as the sound of Krishna's name is heard, all of the senses want to become ears. And they're straining to hear, to receive Krishna. So he once becomes visible to the transcendental eyes of the pure devotee by reflecting himself on the mirror of the heart, by spiritual television. Now we're really getting far out. Spiritual television. What does Prabhupada mean when he uses this spiritual television thing? He speaks of spiritual television like Sanjaya speaking to Dhritarashtra when they're sitting in Dhritarashtra's tent and they tune into the Krishna channel, and there he sees Krishna and Arjuna on Krishna channel with his television in his heart. And he hears the dialogue and he's explaining. Then Krishna said this, then Arjuna said that. So, Prabhupada explains, how does it work? What is this television thing that people do? There's somebody doing something. They're acting out of some part that they're playing. And then there's the television camera takes the image, broadcasts the image, and it bounces off something, satellite or something, whatever the technology is, and it comes onto you have a little receiver, and then you can see it over here. So it's simultaneous broadcast like that. So the image that one sees in the television is like the image of what's happening live somewhere else. And so that's the material television. The spiritual television is, it's not different. When it's over here, the image is the same as over there. That which it's like when Krishna is performing his pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan, and he performs them in this realm, Vrindavan, it's the same. It's not simultaneous broadcast and the image on your screen is different than the Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. And when that appears in the heart of the devotee, it's absolutely the same. It's Krishna's performing pastime. Krishna appears within the heart. So therefore, it's like spiritual television because it's Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. It's the same Krishna. And it's not just, Krishna standing on a lotus like a picture and then there's nobody around. It's just like a big vacuum around Krishna. Prabhupada said, that's not bona fide. That was an ISKCON, what do you call it? Phrase, colloquialism, to find out, to ask Prabhupada, is something bona fide? Is it bona fide to sing this way, or is it bona fide to offer that way, or is it bona fide? It's like, is it authorized? So, such paintings of Krishna's face in the sky, and beautiful little Krishna, and clouds everywhere and vast sky. Prabhupada said that's not bona fide. It's an artist's imagination, but you don't find Krishna in the sky. You don't find Krishna without his whole abode without his devotees? What's Krishna without cows and his flute and cowherd boys in the river Jamuna? And that's not Krishna. It's not bona fide. It's an imagination. But something that's the real thing is Krishna is appearing within the heart of Narada or his pure devotee. So like that little thing I sent out, someone asked Prabhupada, have you seen Krishna? And Prabhupada said, I'm always seeing Krishna. This is an explanation, because he's always singing the glories of the Supreme Lord, because the Lord is absolute. So now he's coming down from that Uttama Adhikari level, he's coming to the Madhyama Adhikari level and is explaining, here's the technology, here's how this works. You sing the glories of the Lord, and the Lord reflects himself on the mirror of the heart by spiritual television. So the reflection of an object is not the same as the object unless that is Krishna. The reflection in the mirror of the cleansed heart is Krishna. Nice to appreciate these things. It's not the same as, there are three stages of chanting. There's Nam Aparad, that's the offensive stage. Nam Abhas, the clearing stage or the reflection stage. And Shuddha Nam, that's the pure stage. It's the same, you know, Hare Krishna and Hare Krishna and Hare Krishna in each case. But what one's experience is I don't experience Krishna, I experience a reflection of Krishna, a reflection of the Holy Name, and then I experience the Holy Name directly. This is experiencing the Holy Name directly, or experiencing, because of Narada's pure condition of heart, he's experiencing Krishna directly. Shuddha, Sattva. Therefore, a pure devotee who is related with the Lord in loving transcendental service can experience the presence of the Lord at every moment. That's Prabhupada's response, seeing Krishna at every moment. And is he pulling our leg, or is he just teasing us, or something? He's letting us know that this is the platform of devotional service where he wants to bring us to also. Then Prabhupada goes on explaining, now from Krishna's side, Krishna becomes attracted when such chanting as Narada chanting happens. And Prabhupada explains it's natural psychology. We find this in people. Someone's singing the praises of somebody, of yourself. And the ears perk up, just like if it's the other way around. Someone is vilifying. We don't like to hear that. So, that's our mundane reflection or sentiment that resembles Krishna's pure position. Krishna's pure position is not egotistical in Krishna's case as it is in ours. It's a natural attraction, and because of the love. He's attracted by the love of his devotee. And so being attracted, he appears. Now he's always there, whether we have love or don't have love. Krishna is always in our heart. He's loving. But we're hearing something about this, what happens on Krishna's side. When he hears the singing of his glories and his holy name, and his activities, like Narada does with pure heart, Krishna appears. Since he is absolute, he can appear himself in the picture of his glorification, the two things being identical. Now back to Narada. Why is Narada doing this? Prabhupada explained, it's not for his benefit, not for some selfish reason that Narada is doing, but it's his relationship with Krishna. Because by speaking and singing the glories of the Lord, which are identical with the Lord, Narada is entering into the Lord's presence. He wants to be active in this loving relationship with the Lord, and so he does. He's exchanging loving feelings with the Lord through that medium of singing. He penetrates into the presence of the Lord by the transcendental chanting, is how Prabhupada writes. Then, to bring all of this to a conclusion, or to begin, the next verse is part of the conclusion of the chapter. He's going to bring it back to the discussion that he had with Vyas before he started giving his autobiography. That the topic is what to do about the age of Kali that is about to begin. You've compiled all the Vedas for the purpose of those who are victims of this age of Kali. But even you're not satisfied, so what to speak of the people in general who might read your literature? So, let that literature be composed which simply glorifies the Supreme Lord like I do, and this is how I came to that position. So I came from an obscure nobody position, and same for people of this age. He says, it is personally experienced by me that those who are always full of cares and anxieties due to desiring contact of the senses with their objects can cross the ocean of nations on the most suitable boat. The constant chanting of the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. So he wants to have Vyas assist him in a way that's suitable for Vyas, just as we should try to assist in ways that are suitable for us. Narada is this transcendental, Prabhupada calls him a transcendental spaceman, that he travels and he goes here and there just at will, playing upon his veena and singing glories of the Lord and bringing people to pure devotion. Vyas, he's a literary personality, so he should compose literature. And whatever our thing is, whatever gift that Krishna has endowed us with, we should use that similarly to establish the glorification of the Lord. And what will that accomplish? Narada is saying, by my personal experience, here's what it accomplishes. Those persons who are filled with cares and anxieties. You know anybody that has some cares and anxieties in this world? I know a bunch of people that have cares and anxieties. Maharaj, what should I do? Follow Narada Muni. And what's the follow Narada Muni program? Chant the glories of the Lord. Because what are those cares and anxieties coming from? They're coming from desiring contact of the senses with sense objects. Really? That's where cares and anxieties come from? Yehi samsparshaja bhoga. So the same language is here in this verse. Matra sparshe chaya. Matra. Does it sound familiar? Matra sparsha stukantaya sitoshna. The senses in contact with sense objects creates, in the presence of the mode of passion, creates desire to enjoy that object. Matra sparsha stukantaya. Comes duality. Satoshna sukha dukkha da, it gives sukha and dukkha. And sometimes it's dukkha and sometimes it's sukha, and we want the sukha and we don't want the dukkha, and we get both. And so we're unhappy. We want the sukha. But whatever sukha is, just it's just an imagined sense of what real happiness is anyways. It's just within the mind. So the unhappiness is within the mind. It's not within the object or within the senses. It's within the mind. Because we want to enjoy the object. And it's completely foreign. It's alien to the real happiness that we really want. But because we abandoned ourselves and we went over to this cuckoo land of trying to enjoy sense objects, we suffer. Those who know that, and even those that don't know that, but can experience association with Narada Muni, hearing the glories of the Lord, then it brings the mind back to Krishna. So that's what's in the purport. The whole purport is about bringing the mind to Krishna. Make that subject matter. This is Dr. Prabhupada's prescription. The prescription of how to cure the disease of material existence. The symptom of a living being is that he cannot remain silent for some time. He must be doing something, thinking something, talking something, about something. Generally, the materialistic men think and discuss about subjects which satisfy their senses. But as soon as these things are exercised under the influence of the external illusory energy, such sensual activities do not actually give any satisfaction. On the contrary, they become filled with cares and anxieties. This is called Maya. Or what is not? That which cannot give them any satisfaction is accepted as an object for satisfaction. So, Narada Muni, by his personal experience, says that satisfaction for such frustrated beings engaged in sense gratification is to chant always the activities of the Lord. The point is that the subject matter only should be changed. No one can check the thinking activities of a living being, nor the feeling, willing, and working processes, but if one actually wants happiness, one must change the subject matter only. And he gives examples. So the principle is, bring the mind to Krishna through the activities that we have natural inclination to do. We talk about Krishna. We think about Krishna. We work for Krishna. And that's the natural condition of the living being, and that's where the natural happiness and the... So we say, you know, that our common, you know, pass out a mantra card inviting people to chant Hare Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna and become free from material distress. It's not just an advertisement. It's the potency of the holy name. Instead of relishing activities of cinema artists, one can turn his attention to the activities of the Lord with his eternal associates like the gopis and the Lakshmis. The Almighty Personality of God, by His causeless mercy, descends on earth and manifests activities almost on the line of worldly men, but at the same time extraordinarily. Because He is Almighty, He does so for the benefit of all conditioned souls so they can turn their attention to transcendence. So over here is bad. That's this. Always in contact, desiring contact of the senses with sense objects. Matra sparsha chaya muhu. So Narada is saying, that's the bad program. Let's go for the good program. Bhava Sindhu, that's the ocean of material nations. Plava. Here's a boat to cross over that ocean of material nations. And the boat appears, one can easily, quickly, at once, cross over to the other side of this ocean of nations by Haricharya Anuvarnanam. Haricharya is like Charya, Acharya. The activities of Hari Anuvarnanam, by constantly reciting them. Constant recitation. Oh, that's what we're getting ourselves prepared to do for this 4th of July weekend. Just one activity after the next activity, after just glorification of the holy name of Krishna in different ways. Speaking about it, engaging in the activity in varieties of ways, and chanting and chanting and chanting, and hearing and chanting, and the cares of worldly existence will go far away till we're done, and then Monday, July 7th, they'll start up again. And we'll think, why can't be like this all the time? It can't be like this all the time because we have this matra sparshash chaya muhu. We have this tendency to want to enjoy objects. Yehi svam sparshaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evite. Or as Prabhupada says, Maya is calling. Come and enjoy me. Come and enjoy me. Come and enjoy me so I can kick you in the face. Not very nice. And just, I forget which one of the Iliad and the Odyssey, the same, you know, this siren is calling and calling. It's Maya. It's all cultures, the essential idea is there. Trying to be the enjoyer of that which we're not only not meant to be enjoyed, it's not enjoyable. Trying to be the enjoyer of that which is not enjoyable. It's frustration. But absent any spiritual conception, one just tries it another way. Tries it another way. And endlessly keeps trying to enjoy that which is not enjoyable. It's really unfortunate. Very sad. And the message is not to give up that spirit of enjoyment, but rather to direct that spirit of enjoyment towards Krishna's enjoyment. Out of love rather than selfishness. And then, very naturally, that ocean of material nations is crossed over. You're on the other side. Messages. Narada is inviting. By instructing Vyasa, he's instructing us, but he's also instructing Vyasa so Vyasa can instruct us. And Vyasa takes it up, writes Srimad Bhagavatam for us. So we can get the clue. And embedded with spiritual potencies that carries us to that position if we want to go there. Bhagavatam is very sublime. Any comments? Questions? Yeah?
You said happiness is within the mind, not in the sense object or the senses. How do you understand that practically?
Well, the material happiness as well as material suffering are within the mind. what we say reverse, it's not on the platform of the soul. So what is it? It's just an image in the mind. It's just an image in the mind. And depending upon the configuration of the mind, the same thing may appear as happiness, or the same thing may appear as distress, depending upon the configuration of the mind. Now, one man's food is another man's poison. Somebody likes this kind of music, and somebody can't stand this kind of music. They like that kind of music. Someone likes this kind of food, someone likes that kind of food. This kind of food is horrible. That kind of food is very nice. It's within the mind.
And spiritual happiness must be happiness to everybody.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That's what Maya means. That which is not. It's not. Neither is it happiness nor distress for anybody who's seeing it as happiness or distress. It's something. What is it? It's a reflection. So, we as Prabhupada would say, we don't say this world is false. We say it's temporary. We say it's a reflection of the reality of the spiritual world. So, if we're detached, then we can understand it's a reflection of the spiritual world. We can see it like that. I go to the office. There's no offices in the spiritual world. But there are people doing things. And this is a gross distortion of that. And what are people doing? They're trying to enjoy. They're trying to create something for enjoyment. But in the spiritual world, they're trying to create something for Krishna's enjoyment. According to the modes of nature, they're creating it in factories over here. And they're in Goloka Vrindavan, they're creating something for Krishna's enjoyment, making musical instruments and singing and dancing and making ornaments and doing things for Krishna. So the modes of nature distort, and then the image is a distorted image. It's just an image. There's no substance. It's right in the very beginning of the first canto. There's category and substance. It's like a Socratic notion. Socrates described like that. There's the realm of the absolutes, and then there's this thing that's a reflection of the realm of the absolutes through the mind. So it comes out different than the substance. Anyway, that both the happiness and the distress of this world are created in the factory of the mind. They're just images. Prabhupada would sometimes describe the images of a movie. At least the old system, I don't know how it works digitally, but the old system was there would be frames, and the frames move fast enough, it looks like there's moving pictures. That's how they got the moving pictures. Picture, 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 moving pictures. But all it is a picture, with the light passing through that film, and then it's projected on a screen, and it looks like life. But it's just... picture. It's not life.
So for a person who has not realized spiritual happiness, or not even experienced spiritual happiness, how can I compare the happiness of them? Because I'm just saying, no.
It's metaphorical. It's like, but you know, that even the thing that's like is not the thing. Sadaputta explores, this is off the track a little bit, but he explores the notion that theoretical physicists have about virtual reality. You've seen some of that writing that he's done? you know, there's like video games and, you know, animated things. So it looks like real, but it's not real. So then philosophically, that's not real. Is it any less real than this? This is also not real. You know, if somebody's always, so they have these virtual glasses that, you know, you can see objects and move through virtual reality. So then, you know, philosophically, is that any more real or less real than what we have, this reality? Just, you know, the mundane scientists are going through that exploration. And just, you know, levels of evolution. When somebody, you know, sees a love story and a, or a murder story or a horror story, or, you know, they have all these experiences and emotions of love and fear and violence. But it's like a dream. Similarly, the overall, whether it's awake or sleep state, from the Vedic perspective, the absolute perspective, it's all a dream. A daydream and a night dream. Because it's when the dream is over, then a real life begins. And that is a reflection of a real life. It's not a real life. So how to draw the mind from that which is not a real life to a real life? It's the medicine is here. The remedy is here. Within the pages of the very Bhagavatam that we're reading, describing the process. It's helping us to understand the process. So when it launches into description of Krishna's activities, we're not thinking it's something fanciful. We're prepared to understand what it is. And then those experiences that we have of detachment from the movie, the illusion of seeking happiness through sense pleasure, it gives us an understanding of the science, how it works. Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj, we were hearing about how Narada Muni was constantly seeing Krishna within his heart. Connecting to yesterday's discussion, we should also develop a hankering for such kind of seeing. But we also hear that we should not try to see Krishna, but we should act in such a way that Krishna should see us.
Okay, so now you know what to do. Develop such an anchoring. Knowing the loving nature of Krishna, he'll come.
Is there a difference in the two kinds of seeing that is mentioned here? Or?
That's direct. Because while Narada is seeing the Lord within his heart, he also goes to visit Krishna in Dwarka. He goes to visit Narayan in Vaikuntha. There's variety. But it's just, at the same time, there's variety, it's the same. It's not because it's the same, he just, you know, doesn't go anywhere. Just sits down and sings. It's variety. For the Lord's pleasure. So, you know, we can't like close our eyes and just imagine what that's like. Or stretch our brain and try to figure out what it's like. But that's what it's like. It's just varieties of Lord's happiness. engaging in varieties of exchanges with his different devotees. And the variety is unlimited because the Lord is unlimited. It's very nice. Anything? Lady's side.
Can you again explain the category and substance that you were trying to explain? I wasn't really clear.
In the early verses, first couple of verses of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada alludes to a classic notion of philosophy, but it conforms with the Vedic conception also that spirit is substance. People, worldly people say it the other way around. You know, this is real. This is substantial. And your whole idea of spiritual stuff, no, it's just for kids, for people who are weak-minded. This is real. Our understanding is just the opposite. This is category, and the spiritual realm is substance. Substance meaning it doesn't come into being and go out of being. That's eternally there. That's substantial. So the way that Plato explores this, there's a whole literature explaining this idea of substance and category. He speaks of the realm of the absolutes. The realm of the absolute. Maybe it's plural. And he gives the example of chair. Where does chair come from? Chair comes from, before there's a chair, comes from the mind of somebody. Where did the idea of chair come within the mind of somebody? It comes from someplace, and that someplace it comes from is, there's chairs. Otherwise, how can it appear within the mind? And then appear here. So the chair that he builds, it's also temporary. The thought within the mind is also temporary, but it's a long philosophical thing, but it alludes to that which is substance. And over here is category, chair. But what was it before it was chair? It was tree. And what was it before it was tree? It was earth. And what was it, and what will be after its chair? It was ashes. Or back to earth. So, we call it chair. But that's just category. The substance is not just, you know, the elements that the chair is made of. The substance is where is that realm where there are absolute things, such as chairs, and that you expand that, or extend it logically to all variety of existence. And that substance, it's sat, eternal. And this side is asat, temporary. And within this temporary realm, we have categories. There's a house, there's a tree. It's of a particular configuration for some period of time. Now you see it, now you don't. It's insubstantial. But for some time we have a category. It's a house. It's a tree. It's a body. It's a feeling. It's a, you know, an action. It's insubstantial. So this is the realm of category, and the absolute realm is the realm of substance. So the explanation that's given in the Bhagavatam in those beginning verses is the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam is taking us to that which is substantial and away from simply identifying with category. You don't call the category false, because it's something, it's a category. There's a tree, there's a house. But it's temporary. In the spiritual world, there's trees and there's houses and there's people. But they're eternal. We don't have experience of that, at least to our recollection. So it's like far out idea. It's another idea. But it's more than another idea. It's real. It's substantial. And one can experience that substance through the means that Narada is giving. And wants Vyas to give, and by instructing Vyas, he wants us to give, wants us to experience and to give it. And this just to repeat, because it's the message of this morning, by taking that up, the superfluous to the living entity cares and anxieties and all of the dukkha, as well as all of the so-called sukha, it fades. And the real happiness that we're hankering for becomes experienced proportionately, progressively. Anything else? Yes?
I wanted to express my appreciation and gratitude for, if Srila Prabhupada mentions here, the concept of spiritual television. And the way you explained it, there's a transmitter somewhere, and it bounces up something, and then there's a receiver. I was personally, in our morning discussions, we are focusing on devotee relationships. So I was appreciating the importance of being a receiver, being always tuned into that satellite or the devotee who is giving us the access to directly perceive what's happening in the spiritual realm. This whole explanation made it very visually very clear to carry in the heart.
Yes. Prabhupada's explanation, so we'll give all credit to Prabhupada. It's his explanation. It's his metaphor and his explaining of the metaphor and just sharing Prabhupada with you. Yeah.
Maharaj, I want a clarification if I understood it right or not. And most of what I understand is from osmosis. So, like you were explaining that this material world is temporary, but on the other side we hear that soul is eternal, and we have put through this experience of going through material birth and death. So is it like a dream that?
Yes. Yes. It's an unending dream.
Would we remember this when we go back to earth?
We won't be very eager to remember it.
Because
Prabhupada said, it's like a flash. Although it's endless births and deaths, we cannot, endless in the sense that we cannot trace out how long we've been in this material existence. On the other hand, when our awake state of consciousness is restored, it's like a flash. So it's not something we're interested in. We're interested in our healthy, wholesome activity, and the natural, loving activity with Krishna.
So Maharaj,
I'm listening.
Would that mean that when the soul goes back to Godhead, the subtle body doesn't go?
That's right. Dissolves. Isn't that nice? And for that matter, even super soul accompanying the living entity is no longer in the spiritual world. Super soul is to accompany the living entity, but in our forgetfulness. But then Krishna as super soul is before us, so super soul is manifested as the created realm. And all of those, there's mind in the spiritual world, but it's not this one. This one dissolves. It's just a material energy. Kapila Dev describes that to Devahuti. There's no other process that does that. The Bhakti process does that. Yes?
Why did you mention that Krishna was attractive when Narada Muni was glorifying him? And the mundane reflection is that our ears get perked up and somebody glorifies us.
That's right.
And the solution that you gave was that we need to bring our mind back to Krishna.
Yes.
Sometimes I feel that I just like it when somebody talks good things about me. And
sure.
I just stay in that inertia. And I have to try very forcefully to bring my mind back to Krishna.
Uh-huh.
Is there some process by which I can bring it back?
Yes. Immediately, when that glorification sound vibration comes, turn your thought to glorifying Krishna. And there's unlimited numbers of ways to do that, but you can try some simple ones. Like, try humility. What our acharyas say in statements of humility is that the only reason, my dear devotee, that you're seeing anything good in me is because of your good qualities. Because in fact, over here, there isn't anything good. It's just your exalted nature. You're seeing good even when there isn't good. It's like a tennis game, you know. They hit the ball and you hit the ball back. Or, if there's any good quality that you see in me, it's only because my spiritual master found me in some dark place and has lifted me out of that dark place and has given me some semblance of something good. Because there was no good quality to be found in me. Only pride and arrogance and foolishness and just the mercy of my spiritual master and Krishna. Etc. You go down the list. And then the glorification goes to others. It's deflected or it's transmitted to Krishna. Or, you know, the cyclic succession. The real thing, you know, like in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, another is expressions of humility. The real fact is, I am totally unqualified, but if you want to see somebody who's qualified, so-and-so, oh, are they qualified? And you glorify so-and-so. And you can just do that within your mind. You don't have to, you can say it explicitly, verbally, or within your mind, rather than just like, uh-oh, here comes this. Then you're in this defense mode, and you're, so but take a positive, or they use this phrase these days, proactive. Take an active stance where you're in feelings of humility and in a mood of glorifying others. Amanina manadena, from Shikshastakam. Did you come to Gita Nagari? Okay. You can listen to those. Devoid of all sense of false prestige. Ready to offer all respects to others. Because false prestige is the sponge that's trying to soak in this nice glorification. It's just false prestige. It's just illusion. And in the beginning stage, because as you're describing, it's wary of the consequences of getting sucked into that. And so it's defense. But in a spiritually mature stage, a pure devotee of the Lord, because they're always situated in this mood of, on the one hand, humility, and the other hand, great eagerness to serve and glorify, it just happens spontaneously. So in our stage, there may have to be some little practice going on, where we know the peril of false prestige. We're not going to get sucked in. So instead, we practice this other position. And when that other position is sincerely practiced, it just becomes part of nature. When I was at the Detroit Rath Yatra, where I was walking through the crowd from the place where I was sitting, because they put the portable toilets some, you know, long, far distance away, probably for good reason. And so just walking through the crowd, I was with this young American, a truck driver. So he was like, you know, kind of real wholesome, straightforward, down-to-earth man. And as I was walking, different people would come and pay their obeisances. And he was saying, you know, how do you process this all the time? Must get tiring after a while, doesn't it? So he was like, you know, he was a little surprised. Not surprised, you know, just assimilating, taking it in. How does this work? And there's a long explanation, but a short explanation is, it's just service. If it comes to me, oh, just see, now everyone's recognizing I'm this very important person, and they're just coming and falling at my feet. At last, people have gotten a little intelligence and have understood things the right way. Some kind of prideful spirit. No, it's illusion. But in service, it's just service. And one has to be a qualified servant to do service. It was a very difficult experience for me when I first took sannyas. One day I'm paying obeisances to everybody, and the next day everybody's paying obeisances to me, and he goes, wait, stop it. Anyway, so what do you do? But it's not to me. I'm the same person as I was yesterday. But it's the position of sannyas is within society, within spiritual society. One should honor and respect, but it's not to me. So by being a devotee of Krishna, Krishna wants to. Appreciate his devotee. So then, you know, simple answer is, you know, Krishna's mercy. Anything that, you know, it's just Krishna's mercy. Not me, it's just Krishna's mercy. In short. And see, whatever, you know, the unfortunate is also Krishna's mercy. If it's not unfortunate, it's purification. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.